There's a percentage of the population don't have a roof over their head. If I make $1 billion out of Snapfix, the millisecond that comes in, that's going towards a charitable endeavor to put roofs over people's heads.
How's it going? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment reveals the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. Today, we meet the founder who's building a billion-dollar business only with the pure intention of giving it all away. Today, I'm talking to Paul McCarty, the founder of Snapfix. But first, quick thank you to my partner, Iconic. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from Iconic offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Iconic offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Iconic offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day. Bring your team. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Iconic Offices. Paul, welcome to the pod.
Absolutely delighted to be here, Gary. Sincerely, I'm thrilled to be here at Iconic Offices.
You sound excited. I'm excited listening to you.
I've listened to a few of your podcasts, so I'm thrilled to be here.
A few. It better be more than a few now. After today, I'm going to send you 10 to listen to.
You're competing with David Senra, but I'm working up your list.
I'll catch him. Don't you worry. I'll catch him after this. This will be the one that puts me over the edge.
Yeah.
Paul, welcome. What is Snapfix? I always forget to ask people, and people are like, I love the pod, but like, you always forget to ask people what to do. So what is Snapfix?
The easiest way I can explain Snapfix is Snapfix is the WhatsApp for the maintenance and management of buildings, infrastructure, and equipment. It's a very, very simple and intuitive piece of software that uses photos to communicate and traffic lights to collaborate and get things done. You take a snap of an issue in red, you progress it in yellow, and you complete it in green. Everybody understands it. It's like a new universal language of photos and traffic lights for getting things done.
The traffic light analogy, that I can relate to that. You said something to me when we were having a bit of coffee, and you said, you have to believe when you don't believe. What does that mean?
I actually, that's not my thought. That was from a VC that I heard on a podcast a couple of years ago. And he was asked, how hard is it to start a company? Like, what's the definition of how, articulate how really, really, really hard it is? And his answer was, you've got to believe when you don't believe. And I guess one of the moments for me in that regard was when COVID hit. And we're seeing all these terrible videos of what's happening around the world. And there's an instant when you realize, oh, crikey, this is not good. And you just have to just believe that the world will go on. We will recover. Buildings will always need maintenance and health and safety to be attended to and all the rest of it. And you just need to navigate through it. So it's when you're passionate about something as a founder, and it's completely unreasonable, and you have to be half crazy to pursue some of the things we're doing. It's just an innate belief that you have that this is going to fly. This bird is going to fly.
Is that taught or learned or innate?
I don't think it's taught, but I think when a few things collide, like my background is 25 years of computer software development, 25 years of managing commercial and residential buildings. And when there came a point in time about 5 or 6 years ago when both of those kind of collided and I was having a problem, and it was just a fortuitous collision of two backgrounds that just came together, which a light bulb went off and said, hang on a second, I've got all this experience over here. I can solve this problem on a global scale.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I love where ideas come from. I'm fascinated by where ideas come from. And generally, we had a chap on this morning who was just passionate about wine. Loved wine since he was a teenager. And that led him to getting
hired out of Accenture to run a wine company at 25. And it's often the path you don't think about. So you didn't set out to go, I'm going to merge technology and property. I think sometimes people can be too prescriptive and they try force a solution. They go searching for a problem to solve and they get a solution before they have a problem. It's like, what was the problem you were having?
Well, I had my own problem and I set out to solve my own problem quite selfishly. So I was managing a number of commercial and residential buildings and I was getting post-it notes, emails, taps on the shoulder, phone calls from tenants. And then I was allocating work out to contractors and I was really struggling to see what was new, what was in progress and what was done. Which didn't avoid making tons and tons and tons of phone calls or texting. WhatsApp was the common denominator at the time. And this was back in 2016. It was transacting about 60 billion, well, that's what it'd be, 60 billion messages a day. And I said, there's something there. And the whole world had kind of started to shift to communicating and chatting using photos and messages, which is very, very cool. But it wasn't fit for purpose for task management or just getting things done. So I set myself on a path to identify the global symbol of teamwork for getting things done that would align itself with the simplicity of WhatsApp. And I was walking by my house one day, looked up, there's the traffic light. And I was like, that's it. There's traffic lights all over the world. Everybody understands them. So we got the traffic light, we turned it sideways and we said, take a picture. If an issue, it's in red. If you're fixing it, it's in yellow. And if it's fixed, it's in green. It was like, couldn't be easier than that. And that was the light bulb moment or the traffic light bulb moment.
But to be able to explain like that, a lot of people try to explain their business idea to you and they're like, oh, yeah, very good. You're just afraid to ask another question because you're like, I have no idea what to do. But like, I love that. It's very clear. I think, but clarity, brilliance comes in clarity, I think. When you're able to boil it down to the very simplest parts. And people are often afraid to do that kind of through ego. They don't want it to seem so simple.
Yeah. Thankfully, all the competition is still overcomplicating solutions. So I'm thrilled to bits with that. Mm. I put a lot of study into how Steve Jobs and Johnny Ives designed the iPod and the iPhone. And one of the key things, and it's in one of the books I'll talk about later, Insanely Simple, they put a big focus in eliminating everything that's not absolutely necessary. So when I did the original spec for Snapfix, I thought I had eliminated everything. And then I set myself on the goal to take 50% out of it. Mm. And that took another 4 weeks. And it was like, is that absolutely necessary? And if it's not, wasn't absolutely crucial, it was gone. And so the original prototype we made was very, very bare bones. And I think the analogy I share with people is Microsoft Word, which is a fine product. We all pay for 100% of it. We use 1% of it. Mm-hmm. So with Snapfix, we only ever want to work on the 1% of the problem.
There's a great quote, brilliance comes when there's nothing else to take away instead of adding things. So it's only when you've taken everything away, that's when the brilliance comes. It's not Absolutely. Adding and adding and adding and adding. And the temptation is to add and add and add and add because you think we're making it better. When in reality, WhatsApp's the perfect example, right? It's just a messaging tool.
Yep.
Nothing special about it. Just works though.
And it's barely changed in 10 years.
But it's kind of the same as a text message.
It works perfectly. I think what stands out about WhatsApp is it's very performant. It works every single time. It's super simple and they don't over-egg it. They keep it simple. They haven't messed around with it, which is great.
It hasn't really changed. But when you think of it, if you let's say you're pitching for investment today and you come in and you're like, it's a messaging tool. Like, uh-huh. And?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it just sends messages. You're like, doesn't a text message do that? Uh-huh. But it's just brilliant.
It's
simple. It's simple, simple, simple. It just works. As you say, it's like that line. It just works every time.
It has to work every time. So they put a huge effort into quality and they put a huge effort into the user experience as well. You feel better using WhatsApp than you do a text message.
That's an interesting point, actually. I feel I'm a big Apple fanboy. I just feel good using Apple products because they just work.
Yeah.
They just feel intuitive. And we only met for the first time, but we're talking very quickly about energy. You walk into a certain place, there's a certain energy to it. It's like why we moved here. It's like why we moved to a cinema, because we want the podcast to be world class. You walk in, it's not noisy. It's a beautiful setup. It looks well. It feels well. Your product has to be the same. This is our product.
Absolutely.
So we think about this as in how can it be world class? It's the same for you and it's the same for any great entrepreneur. You have to aim to be world class, because if you're not, what's the point?
And a couple of things that Steve Jobs would have said as well, you know, I mean, when you open up that phone and you open the box,
yes.
he put all of the massive amount of design in that box. And when you order from apple.com or apple.ie, yeah, we'll have that for you in a week and it arrives the next day. So they exceed your expectations at every turn. And I'm sure some of it is genuine, but some of it is definitely set out to make sure we're wowing people all the time. It's just that little feeling when you open it for the first time. They were one of the first companies to charge the battery, believe it or not. So you used to buy 20 years ago, you buy a phone and then you have to stick it in for 4 hours. That was insane.
The novelty, the joy of like,
it works.
Okay, now I've got to charge it for 12 hours. Oh, I've kind of lost my excitement has kind of gone down. But business is psychology.
Yeah.
The more I chat to people, the more I chat to great founders, the more I realize great business is just great psychology. Entrepreneurs are psychologists at heart.
It is. And when you look at the process of a user engaging with your product, and some products are absolutely fantastic, if you study it and just reduce the friction and just reduce the time and the hassle, it's wonderful. We talk to customers and they say, when can my entire company be up and running? We say 15 minutes, you know, and they're like, you got to be kidding. I said, guys, this is like WhatsApp. This is not any rocket science here. Industries have been really, really poorly served with complex software, with a gazillion features that everyone hated and eventually didn't use. And today, most of the companies we meet that love to start using Snapfix, they're on Excel or WhatsApp. They've gone back to the simplest tools in the world. And because the other tools are just nobody wants to fill out a form for 10 minutes if it takes 5 seconds to change the light bulb.
Exactly. Like if it doesn't make the job quicker and easier, it's like Jeff Bezos when we're pulling out all the analogies today, but like it's like when he said, are customers always going to want things quicker and cheaper?
Yes.
If so, good.
Let's double down.
And when that changes, we'll change our model. But until then, for all the great businesses are built by those simple things. It's just when we overcomplicate, it used to be the old style of, you know, you'd have to do a day's training to use the software. That was the old model. Now people, and we talked about it briefly earlier, about I just want to be able to log onto the website and sign up. I don't want to have a call with a representative. I don't want to book a cut some time with John next Thursday. I just want to sign up and get using it myself. And people are so used to intuitive products now. Mm-hmm. Apple are a large driver of it. Download the app, get going, bang. Notion, I am a big fan of Notion as well in terms of like databases and running my kind of second brain through there. Sign up, gone, done. Yep. There's no kind of like waiting. People's expectations have got higher and their patience have got lower.
Correct. Revolut is eating the banker's world, you know.
I genuinely believe that. This week, I told the story already, but this week I had to write a letter to the bank to change an address. And it's a pain in the hole because I'm going on holidays and now the card's going to arrive when I'm on holidays. Now I'm going to figure out how to get it. You know, just little frictions like
and
that.
You have to lick a stamp. You have to go to the post office. Yeah.
But like, what were they thinking? I know. I went into the branch.
Oh, right.
I was like, hey, how are you? I need to change the address. And I was like, yeah, I need to write a letter. And he just like looked away and I was like, huh? What? It was as if he said like, you know, you need to bark like a seal. I was like, what? Sorry. I need to write a letter. I was like, I don't understand. He's like, he need to physically write us a letter and then sign it with like wet ink is what he described it as. I was like, wet ink? What do you mean? He's like, a pen. I was like, do I have to write you a letter with a pen? He's like, no, you can print the letter, but you got to sign it with a pen. I was like,
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was like, have you lads heard of Revolut?
Let's make it as hard as possible for the customer to engage.
It was just wild. Yeah. It just kind of blew my mind. I was like, because I started laughing. He goes, I know. And I was like, I'm not giving that to you. I was like, but it's kind of mental, isn't it? And he's like, yep. He's like, we've covered our arse. I was like, I get that. But also, what? So now I'm just going to move everything to Revolut because I'm just like, that's just unnecessary
Absolutely.
Hassle.
Absolutely. And people will do that en masse.
I think so. And I like, look, there is a legacy thing with the bank, but it's just unnecessary, unnecessary hardship. Oh, it's wild. So for Snapfix, what were you doing before that?
So I studied computer science in UCC about 4 million years ago, and worked in the US, Germany, Australia, and Mexico City for probably 15 years. In parallel with all of that, I was always working as part of a family business, managing both commercial and residential properties.
Okay.
So I always kind of had both tracks in parallel up to 2016, when I kind of decided to, you know, start looking at this whole problem. And then in 2019, we started formally by raising some money and getting the show on the road.
What did you raise in 2019?
We raised a million euros. So most
not insignificant.
Not insignificant. Most of it was from angel investors, and Enterprise Ireland came in as well, which was fantastic. So I participated for 6 months part time on the New Frontiers program, and we ended up winning an award at the end of that.
Just I think I remember reading that actually back in the day, because I'm always watching to see who's doing what. I think I remember reading that back in the day.
If you see the video, there was nobody more surprised than me in the entire audience. I think I was getting ready to leave or something like that, and they said Paul McCarthy. I was like, who, really?
And then you write, then you pull out this prepared letter. Yeah, I'd like to thank God and my family and the Academy.
I don't even think I said anything. I was so shocked, but very, very grateful that the judges saw the relentless this focus on simplicity, and that was January 2020, so it was just a couple of months before COVID.
Oh, good time.
It was they just spotted us, and I said I was sort of, and every time you start a new business, it is horribly hard. It is just desperately hard. And to get those little confirmations that some people get it, because plenty of people don't do that. That idea is crazy. That will never fly. And then to hear a panel of people, when there's an amazing array of solutions and software and different businesses that I would have absolutely picked way over Snapfix on that evening. But for them to choose Snapfix was just, oh, okay, that's fantastic. And it's
funny, isn't it, though? Like, you know, like, you're a very seasoned entrepreneur, and you've done a lot, you've lived all over the world. And it's brilliant to hear you say it's so hard to start. Because I think people think, oh no, it's easy after a while. It's damn hard to start a business. And one of the guests we had earlier on, it's a second year in business. I was like, that's a big milestone.
Yeah.
Because second year, you're starting to really start to figure it all out. It is damn hard.
It's unbelievably hard. And you were talking earlier about teaching a class on entrepreneurship. And if I was to stand up in front of that audience, I'd say, everybody go home. You know, don't do it. Go home. And then let's see how many people stay.
Mm.
And then whoever stays, they're like, I said, go home. You know, this is going to be really hard. And I got a great lesson from, it was actually the Enterprise Ireland, just thinking of it now, the Enterprise Ireland panel. They basically interviewed us and said, you've got nothing, go home. I don't believe anything you're saying. And all we had to do was, I was in there with a colleague. We just stayed calm. I said, no, well, our experience with our customers is this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And we believe that there is an enormous addressable market and all the rest of this. And this guy, who I always admired since, just said, not buying it. I'm not buying it. You guys, you're not committed to this and all the rest of it.
And was it a test?
The next day they phoned up and said, we're all in.
So what do you reckon it was?
It was, and I admired the process, because it was, are you all in? Are you distracted by anything else? Is there any fiber of your being going to waver when the going gets tough? And we passed the test, because there was nothing stopping us at that point. We were going full tilt at this point.
At what point did you know you were going all in on this? Because you have a very extensive background. There's probably a lot of things you could have done, probably going into the family business if you wanted, going back into software development if you wanted. Why did you do this?
I know exactly the place where I made up my mind to go for it. I was jogging about a mile from my home, and just thinking about this, will I, won't I, WhatsApp is accelerating like crazy. I was watching the usage numbers of WhatsApp, which at the time was about 60 billion messages a day. And I was thinking, there's definitely, and that is growing fast. I think today it's about 120 billion messages a day. And I was literally going, I'm gonna do this. So I didn't sit down and ponder it for 4 days or anything like that, or stare at the sky. I literally was out having a run, and I said, I'm doing this. I will regress, given the advent of messaging and photo sharing, the advent of the smartphone, the capability of the smartphone in the future. There's going to be 5-6 billion people with smartphones in their pocket, just the potential.
So all these trends had lined up in your head.
They were all coming together. And I said, it's not going to be a winner-take-all market. It doesn't have to be. There's a billion buildings out there. If we get a million buildings, we'll be hugely successful. And at that point, literally, I know exactly where I was when I said, that's it. There's no turning back now. I'm going for this.
I love that, because I think what I always say this on the pod, the number one killer of startups is not money. It's not big mega trends. It's not like COVID. It's they don't start.
Correct. Correct.
Paralysis by analysis. Yep. It's great now the pod has reached such a level. I get a lot of messages of people going, oh, I really enjoyed the pod. I'm going to start my business when? Or I have this idea, but. And I just never start.
Yep.
Because there's always that thing. I think more people need to be like yourself and just go on in.
And you have to be willing to fail. I've had plenty of failures over the last 20, 25 years on computer projects and different things like that. And it's okay. It's totally okay to fail. And even now when I look forward and we have a to-do list of 10 things to do, one is going to be a complete failure. Mm. And then what happens? Oh yeah, that's that one. That's not what we were expecting. So nothing is ever a big surprise anymore on the failure front, because when you're running through walls and you're passionate about disrupting a solution for a massive audience globally, of course things are going to go wrong. Mm. Of course they're going to go wrong. And just accepting it, maybe that comes with maturity or old age or whatever, but we don't skip a beat. We have a no blame culture in Snapfix. If you're not making mistakes, we're not trying enough things, mm-hmm. and we just dust off and move on.
That's why it's called the entrepreneur experiment.
Yeah.
That's genuinely why I called it that, because that is my whole ethos. That is my whole principle. That business is just experiments. Experiments, experiments, experiments. Try, fail, learn. Try, fail, learn. Try, fail, learn. And I set myself those goals every month. I'm back doing it now every month. I have a body experiment, a business experiment, and a brain experiment. And I try to have personal growth above all costs. And I try it, and I fail it, and I try it, and I fail it. And that's the only place growth comes from in business and in life, is those experiments. Because if you're comfortable and you're not trying...
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite interview questions. When I interview somebody, I ask, what are they most proud of? But tell me about your biggest failure as well. And I always put them at ease. I say, don't worry about it, because whatever you say, I've won about that's 10 times worse.
Yeah.
You know, so don't sweat it. And then a little bit of honesty comes out. And it's nice to give people the autonomy or the scope to just try a few things and know they're not going to get slaughtered if it doesn't work out.
I think people are afraid to talk about it. There's this success culture on Instagram and on online, and everyone's brilliant and everyone's doing great things. Whereas I try to go the opposite way, and I'm trying to be totally authentic with having everything out there.
Yeah.
And you can be yourself. I think you said it there. It's kind of experience. It's kind of learning. So it's as you age, you kind of go, what's the point? No point pretending to be someone else.
Correct.
Just own it. And I said this in a previous podcast about I do weekly and monthly reviews, and I used to call them wins and losses, and now I call them wins and learnings. It's kind of cheesy, but it's true. Like mistakes are only mistakes if you keep making them.
Correct. As long as you learn from them and just move on.
Don't keep doing it, because sometimes we get stuck in negative mental patterns of like you just have this destructive behaviors you keep doing. You keep repeating them over and over and over again. But you're aware of them, but not aware of them. So when you put them down on paper, you go, that was the same last month, Gary.
Absolutely.
I think there's a pattern here. I think you might need to look at that.
As long as you learn from it. And then the other thing, you can't care too much either. Stop caring about what other people think. We were talking earlier and I said, when COVID hit, I cried. I cried in front of the team. I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I've gone all in on hotels, and every hotel in the world had just shut down. Mm. And 24 hours later, we had dusted ourselves off and we were back focused again. But even it's okay to get emotional at times. Screw it. And I'm very open about that. When you're all in and so passionate about it, and you've brought an amazing team with you on this, and next thing someone puts a wall right in front of you, which it looked like an immovable wall for about 5 minutes, and it was very emotional at the time. But yeah, okay, now let's tick that box and now let's just move on.
I like that authenticity, because I think there used to be, and I used to do this, you'd have different modes. You'd have work Gary and home Gary and partner Gary and son Gary and friend Gary. You'd have different modes. It'd all be slightly different. And especially in work, I try to be like professional and serious. And, you know, blah, 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 this is how you be, you know, in business. I was only going to stop all that shite I just feel so much better. I don't have to pretend I'm just the same person.
It takes so much energy to maintain all of that.
And you're just trying to be something you're not. It's only when you're authentic and people go, oh, yeah. It's not like they lose respect for you. It's just that you're just yourself.
Absolutely.
And you're just able to be comfortable in your own skin. And I think it is an experience thing where you're like, I don't have to try any more. I can just be myself authentically. And people trust you more. People relate to you more.
No question about it. And that honesty in front of customers too. I mean, our early day customers, we said, listen, we haven't got this thing cracked yet. You know, we're working so hard on this. But if you believe in communicating using photos, for example, is the simplest way your entire team can communicate, then trust us and work with us. And our earliest customer, we still have them 5 years later, even though they've moved to two different companies since, that individual. And it's just that trust by saying, we haven't cracked this thing, we'll work with you through it. And we do that even today with a new module coming out, and we're upfront with everyone. This is beta. We'd love, people are demanding it. They're wanting us to deliver it, but we're not saying it's 100% yet.
It's very, very important, I think, that transparency. Yeah. Some people go, oh, yeah, it's okay, I trust them. You know, whereas if you go, oh, look, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And they're like, that's not fine, it's not working.
Yeah.
You're like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And it's no more frustrating as a customer when someone's like, oh, it's fine. And you're like, it's definitely not fine.
Yeah.
But like that attitude though, as a business, is refreshing, I think. And it probably gives you a big competitive advantage. I think your mega trends, I just, as we're talking, the kind of all the pieces are kind of slotting together in my head about WhatsApp and Instagram and Snapchat and TikTok, all visual based mediums. And you're, generation that are growing up with that are going to be the workers of the future, the decision makers of the future, and they're all going to be visual communicators. I think that is a mega trend that you really have spotted early.
Yeah, because I remember in some investor conversations over the last couple of years, they'd say, who are your ideal customers? And I would say quite sincerely, they're 15 years old or they're 16 years old today, but they will be the customers of 10 years time or 15 years time. But I was being sincere about it. But then, of course, sometimes people didn't fully understand it, and I'd have to backtrack and explain what I meant about it.
But they're the people that come into the service economy. They're going to be the waiters and the waitresses and the handymen and the people that work in gyms. And, you know, they're going to be people coming up. Their first job might be in a hotel. You know, they're going to be the people that will see it upwards as well.
And they've also grown up with social media, and they're emotionally attached to TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, and WhatsApp. And it's a key focus of ours to help to use all of those features of those solutions so that they can continue to be emotionally attached to something that provides great value to their life. Oh, I'm getting stuff done. I can see my boss can see I'm getting stuff done. Or I can see my environment, my hotel, my office building, my apartment building is much better because of Snapfix. And there's a little dopamine hit, and you appreciate seeing stuff bing, bing, hitting green every time.
Oh, I'm getting triggered as we talk from all the property we used to manage. And you're just kind of going, guests to check in, and they'd be like, oh, there's a floorboard loose. And we're like, I thought that was done.
Yep.
Oh, no, it was done. Definitely wasn't done. Yep. I'm getting photos from the guests, but it wasn't done. So, like, it's the use case is very, very obvious. Like, so it's one of those business models. So who is it for? It's for hotels?
No, hotels just happen to be our first focus area, because hotels are a wonderful environment in a building sense. They operate 24/7. They have a large audience of multilingual staff, and they demand high quality. People are checking out every single day out of a hotel room. So they're very, very heavy on heavy users of buildings. An apartment building, by comparison, people check out once every 6 months or 12 months. An office building every 3 or 4 years. So we chose hospitality and hotels originally to stress test the hell out of the solution. Let's find the hardest sector to really prove this thing out. And that's why we chose that. When COVID hit, obviously hospitality was severely impacted. So we went wide to every type of sector, from apartment buildings, office buildings, mines in Africa, engineering companies, construction companies, you name it. We were talking to them, field service companies, people, men and women in vans delivering things. We were serving everybody. But we knew at that point in time that we had stress test Snapfix enough in that environment that it was just going to fly in these other ones. But as a startup, it's super important to stay very, very focused on your niche to get to what everybody refers to as product market fit. So we've got a great product now. Is it a product market fit? Not just yet. We're getting there. Every month we make a couple of tweaks to it and we'll know when it's got product market fit. And it's a, I think it was Peter Thiel or somebody said that you know it, you feel product market fit when people are pulling it out of your hands faster than you can make it. So we're still educating people. We're still contacting people, explaining it, but at some point that will tip. And we're very, very patient. And thankfully, our investor community is very, very patient to allow us to navigate to that time. And it will happen.
I like that. It will happen. I was going to ask you product market fit because you hear it so thrown around so much. And often founders are just like, oh, when we get it. And you're like, I don't think you know when that's going to be, but the pull rather than the push. I like that. It's a great analogy.
It's the best
analogy.
Definition I've heard, because we nearly declared product market fit about 6 months ago because some customers were saying, this is it. Don't change the thing. We got this.
We nearly declared it.
Yeah, you know.
Victory is ours.
And it is something we will kind of put our hands up and say, okay, I think we're at this milestone now. But I pulled it and said, no, this is a better definition of it. And that time will come. And when that time comes, you know, fasten your seatbelts kind of thing.
What do you want it to be? What is success for you?
I want Snapfix to be a verb. So we walk into our customers now and they say Snapfix that, or have you Snapfix that? So it's getting there.
It's a good name, to be fair.
It is.
It does what it says in the tin. You took the Ron Seal approach.
It does what it says in the tin. We want it to be the universal platform for getting things done. So we want it to be the WhatsApp for getting things done. WhatsApp has 3 billion users nearly. We want it to be the equivalent for managing the world's buildings, infrastructure and equipment, as simple as taking a photo. And we'll continually automate. So when you take the photo, we will carry out 10 actions after that photo based on analysis of the data. And we will reduce clicks from people and we'll offer an insane value to our customers.
That's lofty.
Yeah.
I'm processing that as you're saying it. That's quite lofty. How do you get that ambition?
How do I get that ambition? I'm just really excited about the power of the smartphone. Really am. So today our customers take a photograph of a flickering light and we capture the photo and the GPS location. Tomorrow, which is 5 years' time, we'll capture the air quality in the room. We'll capture the pollen count. We'll capture the barometric pressure. We'll capture the temperature in the room. We'll capture so many other data points, which can lead to amazing insights just by analyzing that data down the line. Mm. So when they have an issue down the line, you know what? Every time it hits 25 degrees centigrade and this, then this thing fails or whatever. So
right. So are you building a massive knowledge database of stuff that stuff that fails routinely, when correct. It fails, how it fails, what time, what temperature? You're building a whole huge database of that?
Correct.
That's interesting.
Correct. And many of these buildings, of course, will have smart devices all over the place, which will have quite comprehensive systems in the background or in the basements or whatever. But we will take pings from those smart devices when an engineer needs to get involved. So at least an engineer or somebody looking after a building has one simple WhatsApp type solution, which is called Snapfix, but it's integrated into a lot of the smart devices they use, and they can walk around and see something at the same time. So they can use it manually, but there's also this automated smart building idea as well.
So everything starts to talk to each other. Snapfix becomes part of the bigger ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, today we can convert any building into a smart building by just having people and smartphones. Mm. So if you think of them like bees in a hive, you've got hundreds of people moving around the building. And by leveraging the eyes and ears of everyone in that building with a smartphone in their hand, you already have a smart building. So I gave a talk.
I like that analogy. I love that. Yeah,
I gave a talk at the PropTech show in New York last fall on this, and it really resonated with a lot of people that the smart building is the smartphone. Now, some people were, you know, you could see that they were a little bit puzzled, but it's
you do think Internet of Things and blah blah blah, and
we have to wire
Ethernet and blah blah blah, and you're like, oh, okay, that sounds like a lot of work, and it seems like it's way in the future, and it can only be for smart buildings, and it can only be for new builds, and oh, you haven't got the Ethernet or the Cat 6 cable. Whereas I actually love that. That's the first time I've heard that analogy of like smartphones can make smart building.
Yeah, and the smartphone is just going to get insanely better. The GPS positioning right now, it gives us X and Y. It will give us Z. It'll give us height at some point. The additional sensors is going to be amazing. And we're still just talking about the built environment. You know, there's a lot more to Snapfix in the future than that, but we're starting with the built environment.
So what's next then for Snapfix? Because it seems like you've done a lot in a very short space of time.
So we've spent the last 3.5 to 4 years focusing on what we call task management. So you walk around the building, you spot a leaking tap, a flickering light, that kind of thing. And our customers have been saying, that's all very cool and works wonderfully, and thank you for that. We have a lot of valuable equipment or a lot of valuable assets in our building, and we have an asset register on Excel, or it's on a piece of paper, or it's on some horrifically complex system that no one likes and no one uses. Can you create a Snapfix for my assets? So take a hotel or even this office building. How many TVs do we have, and what condition are they in? So you're literally creating your asset register by taking photos all the way along. Old school asset registers were monumentally complex systems that took, you had to hire 3 people to pull your asset register together, and it was enormously expensive. Now you can do it as simple as taking a photo. That'll be rolled out this month. We'll be beta testing it with a number of customers. And I expect the feedback to be very positive, because we've mirrored the solution on Snapfix. Mm. So zero learning. It's going to look and feel like Snapfix, but these are assets, not tasks. And then you can say, okay, that piece of equipment, that refrigerator over there, how many maintenance tasks have ever happened on that? Is this thing about to fail? Should we replace it? And it'll be all of those intelligent decisions over time.
How did you get this off the ground? Because I know you told me of the minute you had the idea, or like, oh, I'm definitely going to do when you're off the run. What was the next step? I always call that the blank page problem. And you're like, oh, this is a big problem, I'm going to solve it. How did you even start though?
Day one was a PowerPoint presentation with screenshots that I hobbled together myself, and I just started showing it to people. I said, if I built this, would you use it? And the overwhelming response was yes. And then I met about 10 companies, kissed a lot of frogs, and met some people who just wanted to build something just to get revenue this month. And then I met who has become my co-founder, Cathal Greeny, and I said, listen, this is what I'm thinking of building. And I'd never forget what we met. He was in Galway, I was in Dublin. We met in Athlone. I said, I'll meet you halfways. And I started explaining what I wanted to build, and he basically started, do you mean this, 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 and this, and this? And he had it kind of in the back of his mind. He could visualize what we needed to do. And the rest is history. So Cathal had...
How do you find a co-founder? That is a question. Comes in all the time. How do you find a co-founder?
You keep talking. When you talk to enough people, you eventually find the right person. So I refuse. I met 10 very competent companies who could have built the original prototype. They weren't a fit.
Why not?
They were too short-term focused. They wanted revenue this month or revenue that month.
Were they development companies?
They were software development companies. So I met Cathal. He had a software development company, and I engaged Cathal's company for X number of months to build a prototype. This is pre co-founder Vail.
Were you looking for a co-founder?
I was looking for a co-founder, but you want to spend. It was actually an investor once I heard on stage, this lady, I forget her name, and she said, this is a marriage, you know, you're about to have a baby, and this is going to be really hard. And she was talking from the investor perspective, but the co-founder conversation is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. You're going to be spending an enormous amount of time with this person. There's going to be ups and downs. You got to be able to take the wins with the losses. I'm just back from a holiday in Spain. I didn't worry about a single thing. Cahill was minding the shop. He'll go off somewhere and whenever, and I'll have it all covered. And just having, you want to trust the person implicitly. And I think just like the investors we met, meeting Carl, you talk to enough people, you eventually find the right person. But I would never rush into choosing a co-founder without taking plenty of time.
So how did you figure out Carl was the one?
He had the vision, he had the long-term vision, probably better than I had. He said, oh, you mean a distributed set of AWS servers globally where we're synchronizing photographs and compressing them? And I was like, oh, really? I hadn't thought about that part of it. I had the kind of the notion or the kind of idea of what I wanted to build, but he was talking about it on a practical sense. And he kept talking for about 5 minutes and I was thinking, this is it. So then I engaged his company and himself to create the prototype. So we have this PowerPoint, horrible PowerPoint, terrible. He turned that into a 70-page document, a statement of work.
70.
Of the prototype. So this is one screen. You click this, this happens. You click this, you click this button, you take a photo from your gallery. You click this button, you take a photo. You click this button, it's a video. So when you think about it, it was all very, very visual. Mm. And it was his care and dedication around taking it seriously he put a lot of time in unpaid to pull that document together. And I said, yeah. This is pretty damn close to it. And we chopped a lot of things out and said, not necessary. Let's keep stripping it back. And we did that version. And then we did another version. And we did another version. And we just got this feeling together that we worked really, really well together. And 4 or 5 years later, we've never had a harsh word between the two of us. Mm-hmm. He does what he does extremely well. I do what I do reasonably well.
So what stage did you bring him on as co-founder then?
September 1st, 2019.
Okay, so you had engaged his company kind of on a contract basis first.
Yeah, so I was bootstrapping it. So the kids' education college fund was gone. And,
Right.
They can get jobs, no worries. And but at that point in time, we raised some money. I wanted us to raise money before putting people's lives or careers at risk. Let's raise some money so that at least you got a salary and at least we're not risking everything on us by people working for free or whatever. So I was willing to sink my initial seed fund into it because I believed in it so much. And then September 19, we raised some money and we got going. So the nice thing, Cahill had a team of developers. He brought them into Snapfix. They came into Snapfix as well.
Okay.
So we got off to a pretty good start. So they were very familiar with the prototype. And then September 1st, we took off because the guys knew every line of code. It was like, okay, that's a bit ropey. Let's fix all of this stuff. Let's turn this thing into a product. I was still the product manager and designer, which was probably, they say, unless you're embarrassed by your first version, you're not moving fast enough. Thankfully, then we got a proper product manager involved who put manners on the design and style guide and made it look the way it looks today.
So you had a plug and play effect then in terms of he brought in, because that seems to always be the piece people struggle with.
Oh, that's been so good. That was so good because we were able to accelerate, and it's a trusted entity. It's not like you're outsourcing it to another company, and all they really care about is their monthly revenue and the fact that you're paying them every month.
Yeah.
This is different. So
there's no skin in the game there.
Yeah, and the entire team share in stock options and everything like that, and we're very, very open and transparent about everything. And during COVID, we made sure that everyone was taken care of and minded and everything like that, because a number of these of our developers moved back to India or were based in India, and it just worked really well. So it's just when myself and Carl look at each other, they're like, we're doing this, we're doing this.
And what's your route to market? Because that's always the tough one. After for I kind of try to step this through for people that are listening. If they're aspiring founders, you got your co-founder, you built the product. Then what was your route to market to getting those first couple of customers? Because that's the big hurdle.
Direct contact was it initially me driving around Ireland, just asking people for meetings and saying, listen, I think I've got something very interesting. I'd love to show it to you. And as my dad used to say, put a tank of diesel into it. So I would literally get in the car, drive to the Armada Hotel in County Clare, stay overnight. You know, obviously that can't scale, but in the early days, you got to do stuff that doesn't scale. And I learned that quite a bit from the founders of Airbnb when they had the first, 30 apartments on board and they were trying to figure all this stuff out. They visited all 30 apartments and they took better photographs than the tenants did. And then they figured out, oh, it's the beautiful photographs drives. Now we have 60 customers, now we have 120, now 240. And that helped. So going out there and listening to people and hearing, and what's wrong with the existing systems? They're too complicated. What are you using? I'm using WhatsApp. Okay, that's great. But WhatsApp, you're scrolling your life away a little bit when you have lots of activities in a building going on. Mm. But what if we gave you WhatsApp with some kind of organizational structure around it, which was ridiculously simple? And it was that feedback was brilliant all the time. And I'll always take a phone call from any customer, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to get their feedback, always.
There's a big learning there because people are obsessed now with scale and scale and scale and international. I get it. Yeah, perfect. But they try to do that before they've even got a core customer.
Correct.
And things fall apart real fast because they've got scale, or maybe there's the pressure effect of investors behind them pushing them forward. UK, US, come on, let's go. And you see this all the time. And young companies just tend to fall over because it's totally different in the UK. It's totally different again in the US. It's totally different in Manchester as it is in London. Those intricacies are lost because maybe the founder has never done that. They've never put boots to ground or put a tank of diesel in it, as you say, and understood what really goes on the ground floor. Because if you get too lost in the digits, the zeros and ones, where you're like, oh, make that button red. Yeah, that's great, but that doesn't solve the manager of the Armada's problem of room 672 is continually faulty.
Correct. And not developing too much before you get in front of customers, I think it's a big failure for a lot of startups as well. Just get out of the boardroom where you've been designing it, get in front of customers. That's the biggest thing. Get in front of customers before you even start to write line of code. Mm. You know, find out, is there a need there? I'd always advise people to do as much reading on paulgraham.com. So he's the founder of
Voice. Unbelievable. I was reading one of his essays yesterday.
Unbelievable. So yeah. He founded Y Combinator in Silicon Valley, and there's over 2,000 startups have gone through that program. So he knows more than anyone, probably in the world, what are the keys to success of any startup. And one of his big things is get the co-foundership right. Sole founders is a no-no. It's
amazing. That keeps cropping up in all our conversations because we're trying to spot patterns, right? We're doing hundreds of episodes here. So the whole name of the game here is to spot patterns and build knowledge bases for founders that they can listen to and follow. And that seems to be a big one. Someone said to me last week that they never invest in it was Pat Phelan actually sitting in this chair. Never invest in a business that had a single founder.
Absolutely. You go off on holidays for 2 weeks. What happens to the business? You get hit by the boss, that.
You talked about it. We talked about it previously.
And the stress of it. The stress of it. To be able to, I can call Carl any time, day or night, and just say, listen, I've got this problem. I need to talk to you about something. I was on to him this morning about something. It's great. You're just sounding off. Thanks a million. It took 2 seconds. Great. Got it. It's so important. And you're sharing the load because it is brutally hard. I always reiterate that it is the hardest thing I've ever done. I joke with everyone, I had black hair when I started this a few short years ago. Simplicity is really, really hard. And we're building something that people want and that people enjoy using, but it's still brutally hard. Mm. Everything is hard. Hiring the right people is hard. Raising investment is hard. Getting customers is hard. Making sure you make the right decisions on the product is hard. It's all hard. But when you're passionate about it and you're all in, it doesn't feel like work.
So why do you do it? If it's all hard, why do you do it?
I love it.
What do you love?
I'm just, first of all, I've always loved beautiful buildings and property and seeing buildings being renovated and things like that. So there's a little bit of that just in my blood or whatever. I'm just ridiculously excited then about the smartphone. I just think for the first time in history, everybody in the world has the same thing in the palm of their hands. That's just nuts. It's just unbelievable. So we're building a platform that any member of Snapfix can communicate and collaborate with any other 5 billion people in the world on Snapfix if they ever want to, you know, and it's just the, I don't think we even understand the potential of it down the line.
I think we do. It's a lovely point you make. I think we do underestimate how powerful that is and how soon we have it. 2008, I think it was the iPhone. That's nuts.
It is, yeah.
When you think of all the tools that have been invented over humankind, you know, the wheel, the hammer, like all these fundamental things, you know, you're like, God, that's only like a couple of decades old.
And I think we ain't seen nothing yet with the phone, you know. The flip phones are coming out, the augmented and virtual reality headsets are coming out. I just think it's we've got an amazing future ahead.
What's the ultimate goal with Snapfix? You talked about it being a verb and blah, 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 but what would you like? When you look back and you go, that was a success because of why, what would it be?
I think when it's being recognized as a verb, we'll be very, very happy. It doesn't even have to get that far, but solving people's problems in a meaningful way and making people's lives better simply would be my definition of success. Mm. It's just, we've got some customers are absolutely in love with Snapfix. They love it. We just need to find a million more of those. And then it's a key part of the outcome of my involvement in Snapfix is to have a meaningful contribution toward something that's important to me, which is there's a community. We manage a lot of beautiful buildings, amazing infrastructure, amazing facilities. There's a percentage of the population don't have a roof over their head, and I will be putting 100% of my outcome of Snapfix into that effort. And that's very important to me.
What do you mean?
If I make $1 billion out of Snapfix, I'm giving 100% the millisecond that check comes in. The millisecond that comes in, that's going towards a charitable endeavor to put roofs over people's heads.
Wow.
The Sunday Times is a magazine every year, the Rich List, which I detest, right? So
you're going to be on it someday. I don't know why you detest it.
I buy this. No, I won't, because in a millisecond it's gone. So I will never have a
pause that thought. I'm going to ask you that question at the end. So stay listening to hear his contrarian corner about the Rich List.
I walk in with the Sunday Times, and that supplement goes into the green bin. Wow. So it's gone. So I would prefer, and what I want to do is have a giving away list. So I'm going to start it, and I'm giving away 100%, and it's going to
be... What are you going to live on?
I have a job. I have a salary. I have a house. My wife works. We've got a car. I can wear one pair of shoes. I'm
your good. Kids and wife are going to be listening to this going, holy, he's finally lost it. He's finally gone.
They've been all in on this for the last 5 years. This was agreed at the outset with my family. So that's going to be a really exciting project. That's going to be unbelievably exciting. And then somebody else is going to do it, and then someone else is going to do it, and maybe we can do something that helps people's lives a little bit.
That's a serious mission.
I'm doing it for the money to instantly do something with the money, but it won't be mine.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's absolutely wild. How do you balance all this saving the world with...
No, it's not saving the world. It's just... I've got a job. I've paid for the car. Uh-huh. 10 years left in the mortgage. Big deal. I can always get a job. You know, big deal. You know, I'm not doing it to have. I'll never have a Bugatti. I've no interest in having a yacht. My yacht. I've no interest in any of that stuff. Zero. Mm-hmm. Zero. And we're all mere mortals at the end of it, and you can't take it with you. And what about doing some good? But I'd love to promote it so that other people do it. Mm. Like I've given away X amount. Oh, let somebody else be. I want to be at the bottom of that list. and let other people do it, but at least it's providing some good, because it's just, it's an insane feature of our world that people are, you know, lying on the street. It's just nuts. And there's so much wealth around the place. It just doesn't sit well with me.
How do you balance building a big company, which will be, with having a life and enjoying where you are right now?
Family time is very, very important. I don't play golf. I don't do lots of other things that people do. I do like to swim in the morning or have a run, but and I don't believe in quality time. There's just time, you know.
I agree. I find that funny when people say that.
So I like to get up real early, and I like to.
What's real early?
Real early is 5:30, 6:00, and I used to literally be sitting at my laptop at 6:05 or whatever. I try not to do that as much anymore. Mm-hmm. I try to either run or go for a swim or do something for myself in the morning, which is something I probably have learned over the years that's very, very important. I used to just go all in on, it was work.
You're robbing Peter to pay Paul there, I think.
And then, exactly. But then in the evening, I like to get home for dinner and have some time and have time at home. Now, you'll definitely find me on the laptop or the phone replying to stuff or doing stuff at night and stuff like that. But that's all cool. But at least I'm home.
And what's your poll time though? What is it, the run, the swim? What's your time for yourself?
Run, swim, family, that's it. And if I have any, because I'm all in on Snapfix, I don't get to maybe see people as often as I need, want to get down to Cork to see my family a bit more often. I'm probably not doing that often enough. I lived in New York for 10 years. I'd love to see some dear friends over there. I don't get to see them often enough, that kind of thing. But it's just... it's all about just your commitment to time. So, right. But I'm all in on this, and I love doing what we're doing. And every time we get new customers or we get feedback, it just gets easier. It's hard, but it gets a little bit easier because they're validating what you're doing and they're saying, we appreciate your hard work, essentially.
What else do you do to look after yourself?
That's it. Swim in the sea. I love swimming in the sea. Swim in the 40 foot, all year round. Spending time with family. That's it. You know, that the family, friends. I've got some great friends. That's it. Mm. I don't do the golf or the sport thing, you know.
What's wrong with golf? You're hating on golf.
I'm not. Golf.
All the golfers are listening.
I used to play golf, but it's 5 hours. It's 5 hours.
Those ones that swim in the sea think they know everything.
I just don't have 5 hours to rock around. I used to love it, but there's a chat with a bunch of lads or ladies walking around the golf course.
You used to play?
In New York, I played, yeah.
Random, okay.
Very random.
And then you came home to the golf capital of the world, these stops.
Because I was playing in the Bronx.
All right, okay.
But
Urban golf.
Random. And I was a pretty bad golfer. So the world of golf is not missing me, I assure you.
So what's the next kind of like 1 to 2 years hold for Snapfix? I know you've kind of big plans for it down the line, but what's kind of the next 1 to 2 years hold for it?
There's only one focus, which is product market fit. Beautiful. So it's to get to that. So this week now we'll release a new version, and there's a couple of tweaks to it. And next month there'll be a few tweaks to it, and we'll get more customers, and we'll listen to those customers, and we'll just keep iterating on that road until we feel product market fit. We do have an option to raise a lot of money and try to pour petrol on it and on the flame and try to scale. We're not ready for that yet. I want to improve the product, and the team we have now is nothing short of exceptional. It really is. We've got everyone who's working at Snapfix now is really good at what they do, and we'll keep that momentum going. And product market fit is my number one goal now.
I love that singular focus. That is an unbelievable lesson for founders that are listening in the early stage, having a singular focus, because so many founders are focused on 20 million things at one time. I also like your advice about the funding. I think a lot of people think they're pouring petrol on it, but really they're just setting themselves on fire. It really does seem to have it's a double-edged sword. Right, we're going to do our quick fire round.
Sure.
What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
I'll give you a book, a podcast, and a website. So the book is Insanely Simple by Sigal, I forget his first name. It's about how Apple worked on their iPhone and iPad products. Again, it's around ruthlessly eliminating everything that's not absolutely essential. The website is paulgraham.com. Total hero for the messages he gives. And Founders Podcast, in addition to your own podcast. But Founders,
I was going to say, wait a second. Hold on, the cheek of you.
No. This is, so David Senright reads a 400-page book and gives it to you in 40 minutes. And it's like, oh, that's great.
It's an unreal podcast. I love it. Do you know what? I'm a massive reader. But again, you can't read them all.
No.
I just love listening. It's very relaxing.
And how he stitches,
it's weirdly relaxing,
stories from, it's the common threads, as you were just saying a few moments ago. He is just repeating the same messages over and over from James Dyson to Steve Jobs to Napoleon to financiers to whoever it is. And I just find the commonality of those key messages very, very powerful.
It's beautiful.
And he's just, he also, I mean, he's kind of funny because sometimes there's a big word in the book. He was like, I have no idea what the hell that means, or I'm butchering this guy's last name or something like that. And he's very open and honest about that. That side of it as well, which is great.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great presenter. He's a great podcaster. I really enjoy his stuff. What's something you didn't focus on early on and that you now had to learn the hard way?
Okay, so day one, you focus on the product. And you want to get the product right. Equally as important, which I regret not focusing on day one, was getting the marketing and sales structure in place very, very early. Looking back now, I would wish I gave it 50% of my time. So with marketing and sales, you've got a huge number of people you can contact. X number of those are interested in your product. Y will take a demo, and Z will go into trial and hopefully convert to a customer. But putting that's a system. That's just a well-oiled system of filling the lead funnel and getting customers out at the end of the funnel. And I wish I'd systemized that earlier. Okay. We have it systemized now. We systemized it about a year ago. And it was like, really? Oh, I wish I did that a little bit earlier.
Okay. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success so far?
Time is about is the key thing. Wish I popped down to Cork more often to see my family, New York to see friends. That's it. That when you're all in on something and you're putting your time into it, it's what else is being sacrificed there? And it would be just seeing friends, family, loved ones more often than I would have wished. But I see them enough.
Okay, I'm going to give you 10 million euros today. What are you going to do with it? You can't say invest in Snapfix, because every founder says they're like, oh, I invest in my business. I'm like, I get it.
You know, I'm spending it today. I'm spending it right away. And it goes back to what we talked about 10 minutes ago. There's people without a roof over their head. So you didn't ask me to invest it. You're just giving me the 10 million.
Yeah, right? Do what you want.
Yeah. I'm putting a roof over people's heads today, not waiting on it, not going for planning permission for anything like that. It's being spent immediately on alleviating human suffering by just not having a roof over your head.
Powerful. What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
The bit about waking up in the morning at 6 o'clock and get my laptop at 6:05. Now I wake up in the morning and I go for a run or I go for a swim or something like that. I try to do something for myself before getting into the work. So I wish I'd started that earlier. I was doing it. I got out of habit doing it because I went all in. But now that little half an hour, 40 minutes, it doesn't impact it actually improves my day because I'm fresher. I did it this morning and you just feel better and you've done something and, you know.
It's powerful.
You get that runner's high and stuff like that. So you're feeling better throughout the day.
I'll give you 1 million euro to invest in a company. What company would you invest in?
Okay, so 2 years ago, I met with about 100 companies, and then I met our current lead investor, Paul, Greg, and Rick in Sator Grove in Florida. And they impressed me so much by being long-term thinkers. One of the first questions Paul asked me was, what can this be like in 30 years' time? And I was taken aback.
Great
by
question.
His. So patient investors looking to make meaningful investments that it can improve the world. So I'd give it to Sator Grove.
Interesting. I haven't heard of them. Must look them up. If you had to start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
Great question. I'm obsessed about the future of the cell phone. So it's going to be a Snap something. It could be Snap anything, but one that would come to mind would be Snap Medical or something like that. You're walking down the street, you trip, you break your arm, you take a photograph of it, and everything happens based on that photo. So it diagnoses the break. It tells you what to do right away. Take 2 Nurofen, put it in a sling or whatever. It notifies the hospital that you're on the way. The nearest hospital is Vincent's Hospital. They're waiting for you. There's a free now taxi on the way to bring you there. Mm-hmm. So it's just you notify your family and da-da-da-da. So all the steps after an event, because we know all of those have to be done, can now be triggered from a photograph.
Do you think photographs are not going to be overtaken by video?
When I say photographs, I mean photos, videos, any type of image, finger sketch, anything like that. It's just any type of image. It's video would even be better.
Yeah, brilliant. In your personal life, what's the one thing you spend money on that dramatically improves your life?
I'm not a spender. I'm not a big spender, but saving time is something I would invest in. I'll give you an example. A guy dropped a postcard into my house there 6 months ago saying, "I will come to your house, pick up your lawnmower, service it, and bring it back." And I was like, okay, normally every year I bring it up to this place, it takes me an hour, then I got to wait around and then I got to bring it back. So this guy's he's my guy now forever.
I love that. So that's so niche. I love it.
So he's saving me 4 hours a year. So I'm like, he's my guy now for that. So anyone who can save me time with a valuable service, I'm all in.
I think that's brilliant. I love that. I love that. I thought you were going to say laundry. I was like, that's been done. That's the first time I heard someone servicing lawnmowers and bringing them back to you.
It's inspired. It's inspired. Really
good. I think that model can be applied to anything. What's your final bit of advice for every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
We talked about it in detail. Choose your co-founder well. You're getting married. You're having a baby. You're going to be spending a huge amount of time with this person. Choose your co-founder extremely carefully. I would extrapolate that onto choose your investors carefully too. I think a lot of companies fail because the investors put them under too much pressure to do this week or this month or whatever. If you can stay in the game and be patient, if you really believe in what you're doing, and if time is your friend and you're a little bit better next month than you were this month, your best days are ahead. And if you just keep compounding the continuous improvements, you can't fail. But most people get derailed by personalities just not working out.
That's really, really powerful. It's a very important lesson. Where can people learn more about SnapFix? And tell me, who is your exact customer if they're listening?
Our ideal customer is anyone who lives in a building, works in a building, visits a building. So it's
humans.
It's everybody. It's everybody out there. And if you want to manage it as simple as taking a photo, we'd love to you to pop into snapfix.com, and there's loads of videos there and there's loads of information, and we'd love to talk to you. We've got a wonderful, wonderful team that would love to talk to you, or you can self-serve as well.
Brilliant. Tell them Paul sent you. Paul, that was an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed that chat. Thank you so much.
I thoroughly, you probably see the smile I've had it for the last hour. So it's this has been very enjoyable.
Go watch on YouTube. You'll see Paul's winning smile. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks a million.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.